Daniel Carlett is a psychiatrist. He's on the faculty of Tufts Medical School. Carlett is also the author of Unhinged, The Trouble with Psychiatry, A Doctor's Revelations About a Profession in Crisis. He told Steve Paulson what he thinks the crisis in psychiatry is.
We have really become seduced with the notion that there's a medication fix to most problems in psychiatry. And along with that, we have spent too much time in our medical school training learning about a biomedical model of depression and anxiety, and spending so much time doing that that we've neglected some of the psychotherapeutic approaches. One thing that I've really noticed is that we tend to use the DSM guidebook, our list of diagnostic disorders, as kind of a shortcut for understanding people, whereas people are much more complex than is readily notable through a checklist approach. And that I think, is one of the main things that we are losing, if we haven't already lost that in psychiatry.
So you're saying there are a lot of psychiatrists, maybe most psychiatrists, who spend most of their time trying to figure out which medications to give their patients rather than actually sitting down and talking things out, doing psychotherapy.
This is really the baseline type of visit that most people will have if they see a psychiatrist. It's generally a fairly short visit, and it is one that's based on trying to find a label and then matching up the label with a certain medication. Although there are certainly still plenty of psychiatrists out there that enjoy doing psychotherapy and enjoy adding that to their practice. The latest figures show that the percentage of all visits to psychiatrists that involve some form of therapy are less than 30%, and that has gone steadily down over the last several years.
So why has that happened?
Because we become enamored with drugs, and part of that is due to pharmaceutical industry manipulation of our practices, some of the advertising ploys, both direct-to-consumer advertising and other kinds of advertising. And part of it, too, is just patients are wanting a quick fix. It's certainly much, much easier to wake up in the morning and take a pill if you think it's going to help you, rather than going to see a doctor once a week, paying a copay, and going through the process of telling your story. And that can be painful, it can be arduous, and it's something that not everybody is prepared to do.
Isn't there also just a lot more money to be made by psychiatrists if you, let's say, see four patients within an hour to determine what medications are appropriate rather than spending a whole hour seeing one patient?
There's a lot more money to be made. It's really all about volume. So we are paid by the insurance companies per visit. And if we can squeeze three or four patients into an hour, we can make $300 or so dollars in that hour. Whereas if we treat only one patient, we might make $100.
You have one really interesting statement in your book, a provocative statement. You say, the shocking truth is that psychiatry has yet to develop a convincing explanation for the pathophysiology of any illness at all. You're saying we don't know what causes basically all the problems that induce people to come in to see you.
And that's quite right. And that's not even a particularly controversial thing. I don't think there's too many psychiatrists that would argue with me on that score. And what I'm really saying is that we do not understand the molecular biology or the neurobiology of what causes any of the conditions we treat. But paradoxically, we do have some medications that can be very, very effective. But again, what we miss is the fact that even though the medications can be effective, and they surely do work on the brain in some way, the psychotherapies can also be extremely effective. And in fact, they also work on the brain, as brain imaging studies have shown. So the idea that there should be a disconnect between medications on the one hand and psychotherapy on the other hand is really a fallacy.
Now, there is a more sinister aspect to this whole story as well, and that's what pharmaceutical companies do to sell their drugs, and especially to get doctors to advocate on behalf of particular medications. And you have played that game yourself. Can you tell me how you got involved in this?
I did play that game. This was back in 2002. Not that that excuses me. That wasn't that long ago. But what happened is that a rep from one of the drug companies, Wyeth, which makes an antidepressant called Effexor, or Effexor XR, asked me if I would give some talks on the part of the company to doctors as a member of their speakers bureau. And I have to say, I was quite flattered that he would have thought that I could do such a thing. And I accepted, thinking that it would be an interesting job. It would be a way to kind of get out of the office and do something different and to make some extra money. And the fact that he also invited my wife and I to New York for a couple of days with Broadway tickets and a $1,000 check thrown in didn't hurt matters. So after that, I did, I'd say over about a year in 2002, I gave about 30 talks to mainly to primary care doctors.
So these would be usually lunches, right? You would go and visit some clinic or hospital and you would say, look, here is some research showing the effectiveness of Effexor. And you were basically trying to convince the doctors on hand to think about prescribing this drug.
Exactly. We called them lunch and learns because the reps would come in with the sandwiches and then I would come in with the education. It was sort of a dog and pony show that the pharmaceutical industry is very used to doing. I would give a spiel and the spiel would be about how to treat depression. But I realized over the course of time that the expectation is that I would embellish all of the positive qualities of the antidepressant. And I would minimize the negative qualities, you know, and all drugs are going to have blemishes. And for Effexor, one of the blemishes was that it causes hypertension in high doses. And another one is that it's very, very hard to stop. It causes very strange and bizarre withdrawal syndromes that can last for a week or more. And these are not the kinds of things that the drug reps obviously wanted me to highlight in these talks.
And you say that your conscience started getting to you when you were giving these talks. And then there was one where you pointed out the side effects and the drug company came back and said, you know, maybe you had an off day or maybe your heart really isn't into doing these talks anymore.
Right. And they actually said, I'll never forget the way he put it. He said, Dr. Carlyde, I heard from the other reps that you weren't quite as enthusiastic about our product at your last talk. And at that point, I realized that the way they saw me was really virtually only as a salesperson rather than as an educator of doctors. And he asked me, had I been ill, as though that would be the only conceivable reason I might not say something glowing about their product. And that was the last time I gave one of those talks.
How much were you getting paid for each of your talks?
$750 per talk. And I made about $30,000 last time I looked, about $30,000 over the course of that year.
Now, what I found especially startling about your description of all of this is that the drug companies seem to know or have found out almost precisely what kind of medications various doctors are prescribing. Somehow they know if a doctor at a particular clinic is prescribing their drug or competing drugs.
They do. It's a very sophisticated marketing tool that I was very naive when I first started this, but I found out about it over the course of my talks. But it's called prescription data mining. And as it implies, it means that the drug company is able to mine data about the doctor's prescription patterns from the drugstore. And then the drug reps in the field have that data in real time in their laptops. And so when they go into a doctor's office, someone once said that they are armed and dangerous with their laptops because they know exactly how many drugs of each category each doctor that they're going to be calling on has prescribed.
So essentially, your sales pitch when you were doing this was to tout the benefits of Effexor and essentially to say it's better than some of these other medications, whether Zoloft or Prozac or what have you.
Yes, yes. And we did it in subtle ways. But what we did is we highlighted certain data that was really very preliminary at the time, showing that there was a chance that patients got a little bit better on the average when they took Effexor than when they took some of the competing antidepressants. But what was typically left unmentioned is the preliminary nature of that data. And over time, as more and more data had accrued, it turned out that if there is any efficacy separation between these two medications, it's extremely tiny and it's probably not clinically significant.
Now, what you're really talking about is a certain amount of trust that your profession has lost, specifically with this problem of selling products on behalf of drug companies, but sort of in a more general sense about whether psychiatrists are doing the best they can to help patients. And it does raise the question, what can you do to regain the trust of the public?
That is probably the major question here, because along with all the bad publicity that doctors have been getting about the drug company money, we've also been hearing a lot of bad publicity about the drugs themselves. And we've been hearing about side effects of antidepressants, such as sexual side effects, even suicidality, side effects of antipsychotics, such as obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and on and on. And it seems that with every year, we learn about more side effects. So it's kind of a perfect storm of the public seeing that the psychiatrist getting millions of dollars from the drug companies, and then they're also seeing the psychiatrist prescribing so many drugs and being really fixated on the drug solution as the only solution without regard to the fact that we really don't understand the long-term side effects of these drugs.
At the end of your book, you write about how psychiatrists need to develop a vision of what the ideal psychiatrist would be. What's your vision of that?
Basically, I think what people want is a psychiatrist that can say to them, I do not take any money from the pharmaceutical industry because I want to make my decisions based on what's best for you and not what's best for the drug company's bottom line. I know how to do psychotherapy. I know how to understand you psychologically because, after all, I am a psychiatrist. That's what psychiatrists do. And I do know how to combine the right kinds of medications with the right kind of psychotherapy. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to have only one tool in my arsenal, and I'm not going to always be reaching for a medication.
Daniel Carlat is a psychiatrist and the author of Unhinged, The Trouble with Psychiatry, A Doctor's Revelations About a Profession in Crisis. He spoke with Steve Paulson.